AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago, in Nashville earlier. Sheryl Crow performed at a vigil for the six people killed in a shooting at a Christian school on Monday. First Lady Jill Biden was among those in the audience who heard from Nashville Police Chief John Drake.
Our police officers have cried and are crying with Nashville and the world. I have cried and continue to cry, and I have prayed for Nashville as well.
Authorities are still investigating the shooter's motive. CBS's Janet Shamlian reports there is new information about how the shooter prepared for the attack.
CBS News has learned the Covenant School shooter had weapons training before the attack, but authorities don't know where or when. The two semi-automatic weapons Hale was armed with are designed to do damage. When assault-style weapons are used in a mass shooting, over five times as many people are shot.
The Vatican says that 86-year-old Pope Francis is in the hospital and will undergo treatment for several days. CBS's Seth Doan reports from Rome.
Pope Francis was kissing babies, welcoming children, and addressing crowds at his weekly audience. But the pontiff appeared pained as he was helped into his Pope Mobile, and soon after he was brought to nearby Gemelli Hospital for what a Vatican spokesman called, quote, previously scheduled checks. However, the Vatican revealed Pope Francis had complained of breathing difficulties in recent days and will be treated in the hospital for a respiratory infection, which is not COVID-19.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky wants to meet with his Chinese counterpart and has invited Xi Jinping to visit his war-torn nation. Reaction from National Security Council spokesman John Kirby.
We certainly support, at the very least, a conversation between President Xi and President Zelensky, and my goodness, we've been saying that for weeks.
Kirby says President Biden also welcomes the chance to meet with his Chinese counterpart to discuss Taiwan and other issues, but the process would start with the Secretary of State. In California, the state's reparations task force is considering a number of proposals, from millions to billions, being made to compensate African Americans for decades of discrimination. CBS's Steve Futterman reports.
Determining who qualifies and calculating how much each person will get is complicated.
Wealth is essential to economic stability.
Diedrich Muhammad Asante is with the advocacy group National Community Reinvestment Coalition.
Nationwide, the median wealth for African Americans is around $9,000.
That's much lower than the median wealth for whites. There is a wide range of proposals. One calls for $800 billion to be paid out, but that's more than two times the state's annual budget. Steve Futterman, CBS News, Los Angeles.
This is CBS News.
Hire with minimal effort and maximum success with Indeed. Their powerful hiring platform helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates all in one place. Visit Indeed.com/...
A progressive voice for rural Wisconsin. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at WAUKradio.com.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Wisconsin-based interest groups are making their endorsements in the race for state Supreme Court.
The Dairy Business Association, a dairy lobby group, and NFIB Wisconsin PAC endorsed former Justice Daniel Kelly. The small business advocacy organization said Kelly will provide a predictable legal climate for small businesses. I'm Melissa Kay for Civic Media News.
Meanwhile, 300 Wisconsin doctors have signed a letter supporting Janet Protasiewicz. When it comes to fundraising, Protasiewicz has raised more than five times as much money as Kelly. She raised almost $12.5 million in the final campaign finance reporting period. Kelly raised a little more than $2 million at the same time. In sports, Wisconsin's basketball season is over after last night's loss in the NIT semifinals. Tonight, the Bucks are at Indiana. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Hey everybody, how we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripescast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Good. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. We talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
Governor Tony Evers, Tim Michaels said you had gone, quote, full woke. Dr. Jill Underlie said that somebody who says that has no idea what we're doing in schools to make sure kids feel safe.
We want to make sure all kids feel supported. Tim Michaels, we don't teach CRT in our schools. You got to come to the present century here, Tim, and be cognizant of what actually goes in the schools. My guess is you've never been in a public school in Wisconsin.
Up North News Radio with Pat Krylo airs at its new time from 6 to 8 a.m. weekdays across Civic Media.
The Shaw 101 FM, Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com. Bringing some sanity to the airwaves. The Shaw 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
Don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. Let's start off with the entire media landscape duped again. Lucy, otherwise known as Donald Trump, give him credit. You know, the spaghetti theory works. Throw enough you-know-what against the wall, something's got to stick. And the media bought it. They bought that he was going to be indicted. What was it, last Tuesday? Tuesday, I don't remember. It was a Tuesday. It was going to happen. And everyone jumped on it. Oh, my goodness, they're going to indict him. I was of the mindset, I don't know, and I think it's the weakest of all the cases. Okay, nice job, Donald. In fact, if you remembered, I said, it's masterful of him. This is a stroke of media manipulation genius. That he got everyone to jump at his beck and call. And it's sort of reminding me of 2015 again. Starting to get that deja vu all over again feeling where our media just doesn't seem to learn. Doesn't seem to learn. And you go, Rick, what? What are you talking about? What did they get duped on? Remember, he was going to be indicted. Everyone's going, what's going to happen when he's indicted? There were panels and there were stories and there were people, all kinds of stuff. The story today is the Manhattan grand jury. Going to take a little break, a little tiny break, about a month. It wasn't a Tuesday. And again, as I said, you may remember me saying the leak was probably John Barron, Trump's alter ego communications flack, who leaked it to him because there's nothing there yet. So going to be off for a month. And you go, well, the narrative from the right is, see how much power Donald Trump has. See what we've done? We've made them run to the corners. You got to give the right really, got to give them credit for when something sticks against the wall. You know, when the you know what that they, you know, like the monkey in the cage, when they throw it against the wall and it sticks, they know how to then make it explode. But there you go. Now, what's interesting to me is he's playing with fire, and he knows that this is, you know, as Chris Christie says, he thrives in chaos. The most recent Quinnipiac poll that's just come out said 57% of Americans think that if he's charged criminally, it should disqualify him from running for president. It doesn't, but 57% say he should be disqualified. Not surprisingly, 88% of Democrats believe he should be disqualified. Flip side, not surprising, only 23% think he should as well, but 75% of Republicans think he should not be disqualified. So again, polar opposites. The independents, the folks in the middle, 55% of them think he should be disqualified. So kind of interesting, and again, we'll see how this plays out. As you know here, I don't jump at this stuff anymore. We went through 4 years of people coming on and telling us, he's going to resign any minute now. And me going, no, that's not going to happen. We went through with Mueller's coming and do this and that. And we'll see. I'm not going to hold my breath because I still think what has to happen is Trump has to stand for election and he has to be beaten soundly at the ballot box. Because there are no ideas there, just grievance. If you listen to his spiels, it's all about him. It's all about grievance. It's all about, they stole from me. And I think people are tired of that. Look, we're coming out of the pandemic. You know, problems are real. And the question is who's going to move to fix them? And this is where I think Biden has done a really good job. We're moving in a direction, bringing back manufacturing, investing in infrastructure. There's a lot of good stuff going on. You just wouldn't hear it from the F channel and the right wing outrage machine, because that doesn't sell. Sorry, doesn't sell. Now, today, the big story for me was Bernie Sanders, the chairman of the Health, Education, Labor, and Pension Committee. Health. He held a hearing, and it was focused at Howard Schultz and the abuses, the alleged abuses, and the documented abuses at Starbucks. And, you know, I liked how Bernie began the hearing by saying, look, the country's struggling. Workers are struggling. When 60% of the country's living paycheck to paycheck, hand to mouth, where we know that a large segment of people who miss two paychecks, chaos ensues. When you have a 1% who's so wealthy, Howard Schultz being one of them, that 1% of the people in this country own 90%, own more wealth than 90% of us. They own 90% of the wealth. It's insane that they own as much as 90%. Think about that. 1% of the people own as much as 90% of us. When three people, just people driving around in a small car, own more than half the wealth in this country, there's a problem. There's a problem. And the problem is distribution of wealth. We're the wealthiest country in the history of civilization at its wealthiest moment. Everyone agrees on that. It's one of those few little things that everyone goes, yeah, we're a wealthy country. And yet we've got working people who are struggling to make ends meet. We've got people who are working in not great conditions. And as you've heard me say on this program 1,000 times, the way you improve conditions, you organize. Unions fight for better wages, hours, conditions. That simple. The better chance you have to sit down and negotiate with the boss, the better outcomes you're going to have. Because we know across the board, union workers do better, have upwards of 20% higher wages, have much better access to health insurance and company paid health insurance, better access to pensions. And more importantly to me, you know, the economic stuff aside, safety on the job. We know that in states that don't have high union densities, injuries happen, deaths happen. And, you know, anybody held accountable? No. And in this moment, and this is the important part, the most recent polling on this is 71% of the country approves of labor unions. The highest point in my lifetime, the highest approval rating since the mid-60s. When my grandparents' generation were in the heart of their work lives, you know, the generation who came back from fighting fascism overseas to come back here to the shop floor and fight for those better wages, hours, conditions, that generation after generation has thought, hey, we're going to hand this off to our kids. Well, we're the first generation. Right now, they're thinking, you know, this next generation is going to be the first one that doesn't do as well as their parents. And as Bernie was saying today, it's unacceptable. We can do better. He went through and he pointed out how Starbucks and Howard Schultz, because Schultz was brought in when all of this unionization stuff was going on. He was brought in to bust it up. Interim basis, you know, he's going to come back in. And, you know, I think the original thought was he was just going to say how wonderful they are. And people would go, oh, yeah, you're wonderful. We remember. No, these workers had real grievances. These workers have real problems with scheduling, with treatment, with, you know, you name it, with wages. Look, this is a multi-billion-dollar corporation. And now Howard Schultz did what he had to do today. He went in and he talked about, you know, this is for what the work, we pay good, and we have all these benefits, and that's great. All employers should do that. I'm thrilled with it. But that doesn't mean that the workers who provide the labor that creates the wealth shouldn't have some say in it. What I did find interesting is Bernie went through all of the charges against Starbucks. You know, the hundreds of charges over firing workers and breaking the law. And interestingly enough, you had Howard Schultz saying, I didn't break, we didn't break the law. It's kind of an I believe thing. And my mind went to, that's kind of perjury. You know, when the administrative law judge says the conditions and the egregious and widespread misconduct, a general disregard for employees' fundamental rights, they're guilty of illegally retaliating against people. They fired workers for organizing and had to bring them back, but we didn't break anything. They deal with all kinds of surveillance and promising, you know, higher wages and better benefits if they just choose, just don't get the union and we'll give you more. There are all these lists of things, and yet Howard Schultz, no, we did nothing wrong. And again, you look at this situation, and my favorite moment was he was talking about that how the union workers had a higher turnover rate. And this was one of those things where I'm going, because Romney was questioning him. And I love when a rich guy talks to another rich guy and just can't believe that anyone would question the benevolence of the rich guy. And he actually made a joke about Schultz because Schultz was a Democratic candidate for president back in 12 for a short period of time. And Starbucks is kind of looked at as a liberal company. I push back on that vigorously. But, you know, he kind of make a joke out of it. You know, you're supposed to be one of them. And you're supposed to be hyper-liberal. And look where you are now. And then, you know, went to his defense, as a rich guy would do. And in that spiel, Schultz basically told this story about how turnover rates in these union stores are higher than in the non-union stores. And you go, could it be the constant harassment? Could it be that you're firing workers in retaliation? Could it be the kind of conditions that you, the employer, are creating in this place? To where if you just followed the law that my grandparents' generation had, people vote, people sit down and they negotiate a contract. They sign the contract. But Starbucks is doing everything they can do to ensure that that never happens. And this is it's not just Starbucks. It's all these companies. They know that they have the power. And I've said before, if you're a union buster, if your job is to advise these companies like Starbucks on how to not allow the union to come in, how to bust it up, I'm firing people. I'm breaking all the rules because there are no real penalties there. It would be malpractice to not say that. That's how badly screwed up our laws are. And, you know, this is just another one of those moments. Now, Sanders corners him and says, hey, you know, will you make a promise to this committee that you'll exchange proposals with the union so that you can begin to make meaningful progress? I mean, just say, look, will you sit down and negotiate? Will you do what the law says? And Schultz says, on a single store basis, we'll continue to negotiate in good faith. Well, there's been no evidence that they're doing anything in good faith. But I found the interesting language on a single store basis, because what they know is they're such a big company. As long as they can keep everybody divided and eating each other and pitted against each other, they can slow the process down. And that's really what this is about. This is about slowing the process down and then frustrating workers, creating hostile work environments. And I got to come back to this is another reason why we need to have major comprehensive labor law reform. Because even the Republicans on the Senate committee are like, it's the law of the land. Workers should be able to organize. We support that. We support the workers who want to join unions. But we're really in favor of allowing corporate America to avoid it at all costs. And I found it interesting. Now Schultz, you know, came in, did his job, and he did it well. He painted a rosy picture, talked about how wonderful Starbucks is, all the great perks and all this stuff. And I'm going, that's fabulous. But your workers want to organize. They want their federal right to collectively bargain because they believe that their labor is worth more than what you are giving them. And this is where the benevolent dictator got kind of unhappy. And this is what happens in all of these situations where what? We're not giving you enough? How dare you ask for more? That profit is ours. Now, what I found interesting, again, when they brought Schultz in, guy understands messaging. He ran for president. The first thing that he did as the interim CEO is he stopped the stock buybacks. And understand, Starbucks back in I guess it was 2019, had authorized a major, massive stock, some 40 million shares, like $12 billion in stock buybacks. I mean, just an enormous sum. And you go, wait a minute, you mean the profits that you just claimed that you put back into the business? Because they did a great job of saying, look, you know, since the union organizing campaign came on, we're giving out all these benefits like crazy. And you go, yeah, that's exactly what happens in a union organizing campaign. That's what the unions wanted. Now, Schultz said they stopped it. We cut that off. We were not going to do it because he understands what it looks like. It's bad messaging for them. But for me, it was interesting to watch the Democrats who are fighting for working people and the Republicans who are fighting for the billionaire. That was on display front and center. And as working people, the point of all this, as working people, again, it's which side are you on? Are you on the side of the people who are going to fight to ensure that you can put a roof over your head, put food on the table in front of your kids, get a reasonable health security, retirement security, the things that our labor are supposed to bring us? That's the question. I'd love to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I go back to this. You know, the sad reality of the place that we're in is that a lot of our elected officials, they don't care. I mean, you looked at some of those Republicans on the dais, and they didn't care. They don't care about working people. They cared about their rich guy. And it's about defending rich guys at all costs. The benevolent. And you heard that coming out in a lot of the questioning and a lot of the pointed statements. Rand Paul saying, I'm not going to be part of, you know, going after a good capitalist. You know, it's, again, you know, it's one of those, which side are you on? And look, our elected officials don't fear us. And I got an email from John yesterday who said, many of these extremist politicians don't care about the consequences because they see no consequences. Like in Wisconsin, he writes, they're so gerrymandered in place that they don't care whether the young people vote for them or not. They've chosen their voters to the point where they are going to be voted in regardless, and elections in those states have become shams. They get back into office regardless what they do or don't do. And again, this was on display, front and center. And understand how the right has built this. You know, you go back to the Powell memo back in 71. You know, Lewis Powell, the soon-to-be Supreme Court justice, wrote a treatise on how to save free enterprise, funded by the Chamber of Commerce and the Mitt Romneys and the Howard Schultzes of the time. And it was all about how to get the working class to turn against labor unions, how to get the working class to turn against each other and save corporate benevolence, truly what it was about. And they spent money on you know, universities. They spent money on spokespeople. But they spent a lot of money on media, on cable news, on talk radio, tons of it. Because they knew if they could spew, to use the George Bush frame, if they could catapult the propaganda, we'd buy into it. And you see this constantly. For instance, there was a story that, you know, this Fox News CEO, Suzanne Scott, evidently she claims that she sounded the alarm about the company's, you know, problem, their financial problem, should they continue to fact check things that Donald Trump says. And it's just one of these things where you go, yeah, we knew that. Fake news is all about making money. It's not about, you know, helping working people get good information. It's about getting people's eyeballs on the screen and angry. And of course, buying widgets and whatnots from them. And doing the bidding of the wealth class. I go back to that Powell memo and how important that was. This idea that in order to save free enterprise, they had to tear everything else down. This idea that capitalism above all. And my problem with this is, you know, when you get into any of these binary arguments, it's either capitalism or socialism. We've never been either or, and we're never going to be either or. But they love throwing that out. Because if you're not 100% on the side of the capitalists, i.e. Howard Schultz, then you must be one of those commies. And that's not reality. But that's the binary choice that they throw us into, isn't it? And that's how they pit us against each other, because, you know, I'm sort of a capitalist. And then they get the people who, well, no, I think we should have social programs. Now you're socialist, because I think we should have Social Security. I think we should have a single-payer health insurance program. I don't care if it's private or public. I think we should have one giant insurance pool. Everybody pays into it, and you have it from cradle to grave. That's socialism. No, that's just smart. But that's how they pit us against each other. We can't do smart things because they label it these extremes. Just like this with Howard Schultz. You know, is this a decent company? Sure, I'm sure it is. I'm sure they've done some really good things to help attract people and get them to stay and want to work there. Sure of that. But that doesn't mean that they can break the law. If the workers in this country want to join and form unions, it is the law of the land. Now, I found interesting that you had, you know, some people going, well, you know, the NLRB was encouraging workers to join and form unions. The government's responsibility is to encourage people to join and form unions. That was the National Labor Relations Act. That was the peace treaty that was signed back in the 30s, because workers were literally tearing this country apart because they wanted better wages, hours, and conditions. The whole idea of the NLRA was to put some foundation, some groundwork down, and to encourage workers and companies to negotiate, to encourage in the workplace collective bargaining, peace, a truce, so that if there's profit to be had, that profit is shared. If the company struggles, if Starbucks was losing money, do you not think that they would be coming to the employees, cutting their wages and benefits? Of course they would. They'd be doing it unilaterally. See, this is the reason they don't want to join a union, because they want to be able to do whatever they want, whenever they want, to whoever they want, however they want, without any explanation or rational thought whatsoever. And what unions give people is the opportunity to go, no, we want to know why. We want to share in the profits that our labor brings. We want to have a say in the workplace where we spend a third of our lives. We want to have some empowerment to do the right thing and not do unsafe things. We want to be able to stand up when things are wrong. Corporations don't want that. They say they do. Oh, they've got, you know, suggestion boxes, and oh, we've got an open door policy. And yet, interestingly enough, when a lot of workers go to use that open door, it's usually slammed on them on the way out. And this is where, in this moment, I'm hoping that working people see what's going on. We are in a which side are you on moment. And I've heard so many horror stories. Well, you know this. Look, I've been a union member for 34 years. There's some good, some bad, some indifferent.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk from Muskego to Pewaukee. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
CBS News Brief. A vigil has taken place in Nashville to remember the six people killed in Monday's shooting at a Christian elementary school. First Lady Jill Biden attended and musician Sheryl Crow performed. Police Chief John Drake told the crowd,
"From your support, we gather strength and the will to carry on in the protection of our city."
The Vatican says Pope Francis will be hospitalized for several days for treatment of a respiratory infection. Hofstra University papal expert Phyllis Sagano says the pontiff will carry on with his duties for as long as he's able to, and
he has written a letter that if he is so significantly compromised and cannot exercise his office, that he will resign.
The FDA approved selling Narcan as an over-the-counter nasal spray. CBS's Alexander Tin.
Officials hope the move will broaden access to this key overdose reversal drug, also known as naloxone, allowing it to be sold everywhere from big box stores to vending machines.
CBS News Brief. I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
The Shaw 101 FM. Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24-7 at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matnair. Here's what you need to know. A man authorities believe firebombed the Madison lobbying offices of an anti-abortion group last year is now in custody. On May 6, 2022, someone tossed two Molotov cocktails into the Wisconsin Family Action Office. One didn't go off. The other set a bookcase on fire. Written on the outside of the building, quote, "If abortions aren't safe, then you aren't safe either," unquote. No one was there at the time of the attack, which happened about a week after a draft opinion was leaked, suggesting the Supreme Court would soon overturn Roe v. Wade. The court did just that in June, sending Wisconsin back to an abortion ban set in 1849. The 29-year-old male suspect was arrested Tuesday at Boston's Logan Airport. And it's the end for Badger basketball after losing last night in the NIT semifinals. I'm Jane Matnair. This is Civic Media News.
Civic Media promised you something big to celebrate our new and still growing network of radio stations. When we announced the one-day $1 million advertising giveaway for Wisconsin businesses, you responded,
"Just wanted to echo your sentiments about the advertising. That's really a cool deal and really remarkable.
$1 million of free advertising." Now, if you missed this chance to work with our team, go to civicmedia.us and click on the sponsorship tab. One of our local sales pros will get right back to you. Civicmedia.us and sponsorship.
Max Inc. Radio with Dennis Graham from Rockonson.
Appreciate all the support of Mad Radio 92.7. And by the way, a tip of the hat to Civic Media. That was a great article on the Cap Times by Paul Fanlon. You guys got a great model that you're growing around the state, local interest with radio stations throughout these different markets. And a tip of the hat, and you're focusing on local music and nobody's doing it. So great job.
Listen to Max Inc. Radio Saturday night, 6 to midnight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
Here's today's STEM tip. Don't throw out that old plastic bottle. Repurpose it by turning it into an awesome terrarium. Just fill it with sand, pebbles, soil, and your favorite plant. It'll grow sealed right in its own ecosystem. Learn more at SheCanSTEM. A message from the Ad Council.
White person's demand for her seat, and no mention of police hauling her to jail because of the color of her skin. This is Jim Hightower saying, DeSantis World is where people's dream of social justice goes to die.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I thought it was an important hearing today Bernie Sanders had in the HELP Committee. the Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee. Again, this is putting one of these billionaires on the spot and saying, hey, you know, here's this billionaire worth all this money, and making it off the backs of these workers who are simply just trying to get decent wages, hours, conditions, and some bit of a say. And to have him say, you know, I think that they would be better off, I just found quite arrogant. But, you know, this is the world that we're in. And here to share some thoughts on today's hearing, I've asked our good friend Dave Jamieson to come talk with us. He's a labor reporter over at Huffington Post. His most recent piece, I love the title of, The Only Good Friends Howard Schultz Could Find in Washington Were Republicans. Dave, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, good to be here.
I see you found that as interesting as I did. You had Mitt Romney, another rich guy, helping out another rich guy. You had Rand Paul, I'm not going to be part of taking down a capitalist, indignant. And yet, at the end of this, we're talking about a bunch of workers who are just trying to live the American dream, trying to work hard, play by the rules, and get ahead. And you got this billionaire going, nope, I know better.
Yeah, you got to kind of step back to realize how significant the hearing was, just that it happened. There never used to be, whole hearings devoted to the idea of union busting. Bernie Sanders has put on a couple now, but this one was so unique in that he basically, used the threat of a subpoena to drag Howard Schultz in there and have one of the more famous CEOs in the country on the stand, out there fielding tough questions about the way they've combated this union campaign. And, I was down there for it. If you were watching on C-SPAN, one thing you couldn't see was how many workers were actually there in the committee room. And I got there at 9 a.m. and it was much more of a zoo than I was expecting. I was there an hour ahead of time, and there was just lines going all the way down the hallway of people trying to get into this. Many Starbucks workers who came in from all over the place, a lot from the region, but a lot from more far-flung places as well. And there was quite a few folks from corporate there. I think they were managers who came in from stores, who were there literally on the other side, across from the workers in the hearing room. So it was a very interesting dynamic.
No, and look, I saw some of the pictures on Twitter and on social media, because this is a big deal. This, I've been saying, this is kind of a which side are you on moment. This is, and it was played out right in front of us beautifully. And, as I say to people, Republicans hate working people. Look at their policies. Look at this hearing. Look at who they dug in to support, a billionaire over the working people who made him that money.
Yeah, it was very interesting to see the political dynamics here. I wrote a story because I thought it was funny to see, Republicans trying to throw a life raft to, a guy who, flirted with running for president as a Democrat or an independent, and Starbucks being this kind of like famously, liberal progressive company. And a lot of the Republicans, they started out by saying, I'm not here to defend you or Starbucks, but that's literally what they did. They were trying to, sort of blunt the attacks of the Democrats. And I think it was, you also have to acknowledge the shift we've seen in the Democratic Party to see, them holding a hearing, at all about, focusing on the idea of union busting, but also, focusing on Starbucks and Howard Schultz. Howard Schultz has been friendly with Democrats for many years now. And one of the people throwing questions at him was Senator Patty Murray of Washington. Starbucks is based in Seattle, and Schultz at one point, I don't exactly remember what he said, but he basically said he was disappointed to see Murray saying critical things to him in this very public forum. So there were some very interesting political dynamics at play.
Yeah, so we can expect Schultz to be spending a lot of money on whoever runs against Patty Murray. And that took a little bit of courage. And I saw that. And I was like, wow, good on you. It's about time. And I think, again, the big part of this is, I think you got a president in Joe Biden who has fully embraced people's right to join and form unions. And Bernie Sanders has got a huge I keep coming back to this. This hearing was because of Sanders, because he pushed this and he demanded it. And I think that's a great thing.
Yeah, it's funny that, you know, I think back to when I remember some liberals, when Bernie Sanders was being floated as labor secretary. And I thought that was kind of crazy with him maybe being in line to run the help committee. And I think this is why. This is why those folks really should have wanted to see Bernie Sanders in this role helming the committee, because he'd be willing to hold aggressive hearings like this and threaten subpoena on somebody like Howard Schultz, which I think probably no one else in the chamber would be willing to do, frankly. Yeah. Maybe one or two others, but probably none.
And this is why you need a Bernie Sanders. You need someone who's going to be pushing this issue and forcing Democrats, because you just said it, you know, a lot of Democrats, you know, who knows, forcing them to take this position and do it very publicly. I'm not saying anything bad about Tina Smith, but you know, she had a great line today too. That, you know, Starbucks doesn't need a union because you think Starbucks doesn't need a union because you're a good company. That's not your decision to make. I don't think people like Schultz are used to having someone saying, no, that's not your decision to make, which I found really important.
Yeah. And there was a funny moment where Mitt Romney said that, you know, he could understand why some employers, you know, wouldn't want to unionize, and, you know, it's not up to them, actually. It's supposed to be up to the workers. And so there was this very, you know, I think on the Republican side, you know, there was a lot of talk of job creators, you know, and why are we having this meeting? These Democrats have never created any jobs, but I, you know, obviously that was not the point. This was to highlight a lot of workers who've tried to unionize, and according to a lot of NLRB complaints and some rulings that we're starting to see now, they were retaliated against. And that was another facet of this hearing that really interested in me was Howard Schultz. He continued over and over again calling these, you know, just allegations. These are just allegations. But look, a lot of this is being litigated, and we're having decisions now from right. administrative law judges. One just came out a couple of weeks ago saying, you know, in Buffalo, widespread and egregious violations of law. And so we're going to have more and more decisions coming down. So we're sort of getting past these are allegation stages, and we're getting into the findings stages, and the board's going to have more rulings coming down as well. So I think Starbucks and Schultz just writing this off as, you know, people lobbing allegations, the time is running out on that.
No, I had somebody email me today and go, you know, is this perjury? Did he just commit perjury? And I'm going, well, not in his mind.
No, I think, you know, I think sort of the rhetorical game they're playing is that so long as there's some degree of appeal they can make, you know, and the judge issues a decision, well, we've appealed that to the board. The board's going to make issue decisions against them. They're going to appeal that to federal court, and they're going to sort of, you know, string this along as far as they can, saying these are just allegations. But, you know, at a certain point, it's just rhetorical. I mean, these are when a judge at the NLRB holds a hearing, They have witnesses from both sides come in, right? There is a hearing that happens, and this is a neutral party making a determination of what happened, and that's what we're starting to see now.
Yeah, you listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Dave Jamieson. Dave's a labor reporter over at Huffington Post, huffpost.com, the website. You can check out the work he does there. His most recent piece, "The Only Good Friends Howard Schultz Could Find in Washington Were Republicans," and if you watch the hearing, that is an accurate headline. But you know, watching this hearing and watching the back and forth, the thing I came away with is just how broken our labor laws are, and how we absolutely need a massive labor law reform. Because, you know, my grandparents' generation, when they voted to have a union, there was no, oh, we're going to have a 3-month long, you know, browbeating session, and we're going to get away with firing people and all the stuff that happens today. They came in with cards. The cards were recognized. They began negotiating. If they didn't get a contract, they went on strike. There were these things that happened that today just get drawn out. And as you said earlier, Schultz is just going to, you know, just play this out as long as they can to run out the clock, hopefully for another new NLRB in several years. And the workers are going to be left screwed. We need major comprehensive labor law reform. That's what I got out of this.
Yeah, the legal process takes a really long time for all of this. You know, when a worker, say a company's broken the law, maybe fired union supporters just because of their union support, that stuff takes years to litigate. And sometimes the board, and they have done this in some cases with Starbucks, they will go to federal court and try to get an injunction. And it's a big deal, try to get them sort of back on the job in a preliminary way. And that happens sometimes. But in general, you know, there might be a finding that you were illegally fired and, you know, 5 years go by and, yep. and you're, you know, at that point you've moved on. You got to pay the bills, you know. Maybe there's a settlement, maybe they owe you back pay, but they subtract whatever money you've made in the meantime. And so the penalties for breaking the law are pretty meager, and that's to say nothing of the bargaining process. You know, all this, you know, time is really to the advantage of the employer. You know, we're now well past the year when the first Starbucks store is unionized. They don't have a contract, and sort of both sides are making claims of bad faith bargaining. But it can take years to get that first contract, and a lot of employers want to wait it out. They know turnover is high in especially in retail and food service. That if you can wait a long time, you got to get a new crop of workers in there. Maybe they're unfamiliar with the union. They're not as supportive. Maybe you can get a decertification campaign going. And by the way, Howard Schultz, he wrote about this in his memoir, how out in Seattle, those original Starbucks stores had UFCW representation. He encouraged the worker to get a decertification campaign going and got, you know, the UFCW purged from those original work sites. So Howard Schultz, you know, he's known the game for a long time, you know, and he was upfront about how [S2] Yep. [S1] how that played out back in Seattle many years ago. And so, you know, companies know that there's a long game to be played here.
And not afraid to manipulate it. I mean, the fact that he came out and said, yeah, we give our non-union employers much, much better wages and all these other perks and these benefits and this stuff because we know the law, we have to negotiate. And he knows what that's going to do. He knows the effect that will have on workers, and as all employers do, which, again, why our system is broken.
Yeah, you know, it's Schultz, he got a lot of, you know, Sanders started off the hearing with a series of yes, no questions, you know, and Schultz denied sort of being involved or knowing about particular decisions about, you know, firing people, closing stores, this and that. But, you know, one thing, you know, he was asked was, did you ever threaten or coerce any employees? And he didn't directly say no. What he said was basically, well, you know, some people may have interpreted something I said a certain way.
Yeah. You know, like, Hey, Dave, you got a mighty nice house there. Yeah. They're pretty, they got pretty faces.
It was a very, very interesting exchange.
It was that indeed. And I also found his answer to the question that Sanders asked that's getting a lot of play right now is whether Schultz would promise the committee that he would negotiate in good faith, exchange proposals, and do have meaningful progress. And Schultz's response was, on a single store basis, we will continue to negotiate in good faith. That was chosen. I mean, each one of those words were put there on purpose. You know, I grabbed that. Did you find that as interesting as I did?
Yeah, and that's something, you know, the folks from Lidler or wherever would have, you know, anticipated a question like that and prepared him. But that is, you know, a big factor in this campaign and the negotiations is that, you know, legally speaking, every one of these stores that unionizes is its own distinct bargaining unit. And, you know, that is something that Starbucks has maintained from the beginning, that we are not going to negotiate any sort of, you know, national framework, that all these stores are on their own. And of course, that makes it, you know, a much more cumbersome, you know, bargaining lift for the union. And it's sort of, you know, it's on them to, even though they are technically bargaining different contracts, to act as one, you know, huge union, right? And to really keep all the unionized stores on board. And I think that's why, you know, it's important for the union to keep adding stores to the union column. And that's, you know, frankly, it stalled a bit for the union. They've had a hard time hitting 300. There was a very sort of fast uptick, and it was very rapid last year, and things have slowed down. And I think part of that is, you know, the effects of Starbucks, frankly, pretty effective counter campaign, and the way they've tried to tamp this down. But, you know, growing the numbers is really important to having leverage at the bargaining table for everybody.
And the fact that they fired people and they've done all of the things that union busters do. And look, as I've said a number of times on the show, if you're a union buster, it's almost malpractice not to tell Starbucks to fire a bunch of people and break all the laws, because there really aren't any real penalties. Maybe, like you said, you pay a little back pay minus what the person earned. And then the dreaded notice. Yeah, but you're going to have to either post a notice, or in this case, Schultz said he wasn't going to read a notice, which I found interesting. Last question I've got for you. Watching this, you know, in your position as a labor reporter, is this going to play in public? Will this get attention? Does it matter, do you think?
I think it matters that it happened, that Democrats are willing to hold a hearing like this now is notable. The hearing itself, I think it didn't, you know, produce sort of the big moment that a lot of people might have hoped for or expected, some sort of, like, you know, really viral Sanders Schultz showdown. That didn't happen. But I think, you know, having talked to, you know, with workers who were down there, I think there was satisfaction in the fact that Schultz had to publicly answer for a lot of this, right? And frankly, he didn't want to. They Starbucks did not want Schultz to have, this guy's like supposed to be, you know, ending rapid winding down his career and stepping away in glory. And they did not want him to have to go publicly on the Hill to take these sorts of questions. You know, and it was Sanders subpoena threat that made it happen. So I think the fact that it happened is very significant for the labor movement, for unions, and sort of the leverage they have now and the power they've exerted on the Democratic Party.
No, and that's a good point. Dave, I appreciate the time. As always, great stuff. Hope folks will check out the website, HuffPost.com. Check out Dave's article. The only good friends Howard Schultz could find in Washington were Republicans. We'll get links out on social media. Dave Jamieson, thanks so much.
Good talking with you, Rick.
As always, our good friend. Again, make sure you check out their website, HuffPost.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back with your thoughts. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. More working people come to talk.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1948. That was the day that the labor movement came literally to the doorstep of Wall Street. The United Financial Employees Union went out on strike. The union was started in 1941 by Merritt David Keefe, a page who had worked on the stock exchange trading floor. Keefe had grown up too poor to finish high school. He had gone to Wall Street in the hope of finding wealth and financial security. Instead, he found long hours and low-paying work. He decided the only way to change things was to form a union. By 1946, the union had grown to 5,000 members. Keefe described their platform, calling for a general overall minimum increase of 25% in the salaries of Wall Street employees, job security, benefits of a pension fund, and, in addition, a bonus computed on the volume of trading. Negotiations drug on. Finally, 1,100 union members walked out on strike against both the New York Stock Exchange and the New York Curb Exchange. 500 members of the Seafarers Union supported the exchange workers' cause. The first day of the strike was peaceful, but the next morning, the police told the strikers they could not picket the main entrance of the stock exchange. One 19-year-old woman refused to go across the street. The police reacted by grabbing her and arresting her. Outraged, the picketers rushed to her aid. Some attempted to lie down in the entrance to block the exchange. The police wielded batons, hospitalizing two strikers and arresting more than 40. Sadly, the strike ended in defeat in April, as 100 workers lost their jobs because of their involvement. The workers had lost the Battle of Wall Street, the first and only strike at the exchange. Gotta be cool on Wall Street. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So Tennessee Governor Bill Lee called for prayers. Because of what happened on the deadly shooting on Monday. Just prayers. Going to have some prayers. There'll be plenty of time to talk about legislation down the road, but prayers. And I'm going, well, at least we got that. At least they got prayers. They're not going to do anything. When you've got the congressman from Tennessee going, yeah, we're not going to fix it. Nah, nothing's going to get done. And I'm still stuck in this. You know, my generation grew up, we're not going to take it. We're not going to take it. To now, I guess it's, well, nothing we can do about it. What I find about this shooting more interesting than others is that we're not even talking about the three 9-year-olds or the three staff members who were murdered. No, it's all about the shooter. And what I found interesting, and Judd Legum over at Popular Info, pointed this out, that Ben Shapiro's Daily Wire back in 2018 said that they were no longer going to publish the names or pictures of mass shooters. It's 2018. And I've said the same thing. I'm not going to name any murderer because I don't want people to go, oh, well, I'm going to be famous. No. You're going to die in obscurity. And Daily Wire, they back in 18 said the same thing. Now, what's interesting is they just published the picture and the name of the shooter. Now, again, I don't believe anything the Daily Wire says anyway. I mean, it's all nonsense to me. But this is in their words. There was a story titled by Ben Shapiro on the Daily Wire's site explaining why they weren't going to do it. And he went into all of these excuses and all these reasons why they weren't going to do it. And they were good reasons. But this time, and what are we, 5 years away from this? It was February 19th, 2018, so over 5 years ago. Now they've broken it. And why? Well, because it's a trans person. Slapped the picture all over the place. Because it's now about the trans issue. It wasn't about somebody who's with a gun who probably should have had a much harder time getting a gun because of a lot of mental health. No. It's now all about the trans stuff. And in fact, Kentucky Republicans just overrode a governor's veto in Kentucky to have one of the most outrageous bans on gender-affirming care in the country. And also restricting who can use bathrooms. We're back to the bathrooms again. And I'm like, this is just nuts. But, hey, this is their issue. Remember, the Republicans don't have any policies that are going to make lives better. It's all about how can we divide and tear people apart. And here's the weird thing. Good on Elon Musk. I'm going to congratulate Elon. They actually restricted Marjorie Taylor Greene's congressional Twitter account. Just restricted it a little bit because she posted an image, shared an image of a Trans Day of Vengeance. And again, promoting this kind of hatred, and it's nuts. Now, my hope is the younger generation, their heads are a little clearer, maybe wanting to solve problems because they have, at least for now, a future. I find it interesting that according to a Harvard Institute of Politics poll, 63% of young Americans want stricter gun laws. And the weird thing is you can't get the right to agree on this stuff. Interesting story. There was a protest out in front of the district attorney's office in Manhattan. Protesters are out there. A Trump supporter pulls a knife on a couple and their two kids. And you know where my mind went? This is how screwed up things are right now. So a Trump supporter pulls a knife on these people who I guess bumped into them and an argument ensued or whatever happened, pulls this 6-inch blade on this couple. And my first thought was, you know, if we're in conservative world, why doesn't that woman with the knife have four bullet holes in her? You know, why don't both parents and the kids all have, who, evidently we need more guns to keep us safe. I mean, they got to be able to stand their ground. How come they didn't all shoot her? Because that's what conservative world brings us. Because remember, more guns are going to make us safe. More guns. We need more guns to keep us safe.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.